Today we are in the middle of Judaism's high holy days, the time twixt the new year, Rosh Hashanah, the day of remembrance, when the book of life is opened, and Yom Kippur, the day of judgment, when it is closed. According to Jewish theology, this is the time God judges us and writes us into the book of life, or not. But the heart of it is in the middle, the days of awe, where we get to sort out our own affairs. Why are these days so awful? Because they ask of us the hardest things. In an excerpt from her book, The Social Justice Warrior's Guide to the High Holy Days, Jewish poet, social activist, chef, Dane Cutler describes it this way. You shall turn into yourself and face the ugly, and you shall take accountability by asking forgiveness in specific and repentant ways, because the community can only put up with your bullshit for so long. So promise to make different mistakes next year and get on with the business of healing. And you shall ask yourself, who is my community and who am I? And what have I done this year that has brought my community closer? And what have I done to bring discord and distance into the community? And to whom do I owe apologies? And to whom must I offer forgiveness? She continues, repentance and repair do not sprout from you fully formed, but are grown in a rich bed of doubt and self-examination. For this reason, you must nurture your suspicions about yourself. You must question your motives. You must guard yourself from justification and denial. Only from this uncertainty, this shaky ground, can repair begin. Make sure you start with the forgiveness of friends and enemies, because that's way easier than forgiving yourself. That gets its own special day. There are three steps to a correct apology. You must admit your wrongdoing, express remorse, and commit yourself to a better future. If you skip any of these steps, your apology doesn't count. Any apology containing a clause that begins with but will be summarily dismissed. And when your mouth is full of apology, cull the shame from it, as you would the skin of an orange, for the shame is bitter and makes no sweetness between you and the wronged. I think that's a tall order for 10 days. And then on Yom Kippur, you have fasting, you sit alone in the midst of community, reflecting on your life and what you have done with it, berating yourself perhaps, promising to do better next year. These are promises to yourself, witnessed by God, not by your partner or boss or coworkers or friends. These are the things about yourself that you want to change. And at the end of the day, the inevitable blemishes, mistakes, and misunderstandings of the year are wiped clean, not by magic or completely, but by owning up and trying to repair them. A central concept in Judaism is tikkun olam, the repairing of the world. We start repairing the world by recognizing where we've gone astray from right relationship with someone or with our ideal selves, and then return to right relationship. That's the first step. Jewish theology holds that forgiveness needs to happen on the human plane, between individuals first, before any larger forgiveness can take place. The days of awe follow a simple formula. You've hurt somebody. The person you have hurt can just stay hurt. That's their right. The wrongdoer, though, must admit what they did, apologize, and ask forgiveness. Offer to make it up to the injured person, however they can, however the injured person chooses. And you must do this with the real individual wronged. They can say no, in which case you need to come back next year and try again. You're not off the hook until they have rejected your best efforts three times. It's a very simple process, but exceedingly difficult. Without an institutional ritual, it would be easy to put it off. I've been putting off this kind of thing for years. Unresolved emotional pain and isolation would eventually harm the community. Justice is a complicated subject. Our criminal justice system is typically adversarial, punitive, and retributive, a far cry from what we normally think of as justice. What we would call distributive justice or equality is more about our sense of fairness and what's right. Equitable distribution, level playing field. Restorative justice seeks to prevent incarceration and works towards healing all the members of the community. It has often been an intrinsic part of tribal justice systems. The modern practice of restorative justice within the criminal justice system began in the 70s in Kitchener, Ontario, with input from the Mennonite community and the local police department. Initially, it sought mediation or reconciliation between victims and offenders. Since that time, it has spread internationally, and the practices have been extended to a number of settings, including schools, workplaces, and faith communities. But it is far from the norm. Restorative justice practices are like the days of awe in a covenant group. Typically, they involve a small conference at which offenders and offended, as well as community of care representatives, people representing both the offended and the offenders, sit in a circle and share their feelings about what happened and how it impacted them. No talk back is allowed. These sessions may be scripted with specific group prompts, or a mediator might guide the meeting. Friends or mentors are included in the meeting and assist with reintegration of the offender into the community. According to the International Institute for Restorative Practices, these practices help reduce crime, violence, and bullying, improve human behavior, strengthen civil society, provide effective leadership, restore relationships, and repair harm. By encouraging people to express their full range of feelings, including shame, regenerative practices build better relationships. Shame is a critical regulator of human social behavior that needs to be addressed in these circles. Shame and guilt have long been used by cultures as control mechanisms. They affect both victim and wrongdoer in different ways. Any culture that focuses on community will have an enhanced sense of guilt as we fail to meet our obligations to one another. And any culture with high expectations often leads to enhanced shame as we fail to achieve our goals and our expectations for ourselves. Judaism has actually developed models for how to deal with community conflict by reducing shame and guilt. Shame, attacking the roots of your concept of who you are, could be a stand-in for sins against God or failure of the self, addressed on Yom Kippur. And guilt, with that sense of how you let other people down, could stand for sins against one's neighbors, dealt with during the days of awe. The high holy days both heighten and dissipate the feelings of guilt and shame. According to Dr. Donald Nathanson, unresolved shame and guilt can lead to withdrawal and isolation, avoidance through alcohol or drug abuse, self-harm, or violence against others. Restorative practices are meant to resolve that shame and guilt and replace them with positive experiences. The story for all ages comes from a tale set in the days after the temple in Jerusalem was destroyed and the diaspora had already begun. The key factor in the argument in the oven of Acnai was whether the oven had been broken or destroyed. It was a metaphor for Judaism without the temple. Rabbi Eliezer, as a brilliant constitutional originalist, saw the law one way, while the other rabbis saw that the law might need reinterpretation as circumstances changed. There was tremendous insecurity within the community at that time about the future. It was important for the rabbis to demonstrate continuity and cohesion while they wrestled with change. Respectful dialogue between different points of view was necessary, and when it went beyond that and it became impossible to work together as a group, it had to be addressed. Rabbi Brad Hirschfeld, in his book, You Don't Have to Be Wrong for Me to Be Right, uses the story to illustrate a 7-point process for dealing with conflict in a constructive way. Number one, set a timeout or take a timeout. Sometimes you just need a break or a little space to work things out, to let emotions cool. Number two, never lose sight of a person's dignity. Even the most difficult person deserves to be treated with respect. Number three, display radical empathy. We truly do need to experience the pain we cause, even when doing the right thing. Number four, even when someone is wrong, they have things to teach us. Punishment is meant to change a specific behavior or attitude, not to belittle a person. We have many things to learn from them. Five, acknowledge that there are always consequences in conflict. There is always a price to pay. People will be hurt. Number six, even when you are right, you can be wrong. You are accountable for the results of your actions, however noble or necessary you may have seen them to be. Number seven, don't excuse your actions based on ego or honor or God, only for the sake of preserving community and the ability to continue dialogue and growth. As a community, we have been through a lot of changes in the past few years. There have been many disappointments and stressors, and a whole lot of accomplishments we can be very proud of. We have weathered these storms remarkably well, and for the most part, civilly. However, I know there's a big opportunity for healing here. Some of us have said things better left unsaid. Some of us have been quick to judgment. Some feel unsafe in what may be seen as an unstable environment. These are things that can be fixed. We know how. We just need to do it. Reach out to others in the community and make sure you are in right relationship. If not, apologize or forgive as you are called. Maybe if we put our own house in order, we could apply restorative justice even more broadly to broader issues. Apologies and reparations for slavery, land grabs, dislocation, and genocide, free trade's losers and the victims of climate change, for marginalized people everywhere. Before it becomes overwhelming, remember Tikkun Olam. The world has always been broken. Our task has always been to fix it, but just what we can, no more and no less.